The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Kathleen Rooney. She joins us on the telephone in Chicago. And Kathleen, I see that you have put out a book with your sister. Tell me about this. How did this happen?
Yes, the book is called Leaf Town Forever. And as the title suggests, it is about a town made of leaves. And it's based on a true story. Back in November of 2020, my sister, who's my co-author, her two kids were going to school, and they were, as most of us at that point, distancing and taking pandemic precautions. And so at the school, they still got to be in person, but when they went to recess, they were not allowed to go on the playground because that was back when we didn't know what we know now. And so they were keeping them away from surfaces. And so the kids, as a way to play, came up with this elaborate civilization that they called Leaf Town.
Wow. And you've decided to write a book about it, and it's a children's book with beautiful illustrations. How did all this come together?
Yeah, so back when, Leaf Town was unfolding, which is crazy to think it's 5 years ago now, because, my niece Rose, who is one of the principal Leaf Town citizens, she's 14 now. She's a freshman in high school, but back then she was nine. And my nephew Luca also, he's 11 now, so he was just 6 years old. So at that time when Leaf Town was unfolding in real life, it just became fascinating. Like, Rose would come home from school every day and tell Beth and, me about just like the happenings. And it got to the point where every time I, saw Rose in person, if we were able to gather, just chatted with her over the phone, as we were all trying to keep in touch during pandemic times, I was like, what is the hot gossip from Leaf Town? And Rose would always have these stories. And so I decided at that point that we should probably write an essay about it. And the funny thing is, children's book wasn't even on my mind, but Beth and I co-wrote this essay. We pitched the New York Times. To our good luck, they said yes. And, as you probably know, with something in a big venue like that, you never know who's watching. And so a picture book agent approached us and said, hey, would you ever make this a picture book? And we said, we don't know how to do that, but if you could help us, then yes.
Yeah. And you got hooked up with Betsy Bowen, it looks like.
Yeah. So that was the cool thing is, this agent was, because I guess the thing some of your listeners may know, picture books are kind of deceptively simple. I think a lot of people look at them, and because so many of us grew up reading them or having them read to us, or so many of us are parents or guardians who read them to the young people in our lives, we think, like, I could do that. And I think you could. I don't want to be a naysayer, but I think it's a lot harder than it looks. And so, one of the things this agent Gwen was able to do is send us examples of sort of how, keeping that future illustrator in mind. We didn't know Betsy Bowen was going to be our illustrator at that point, but just sort of teaching us how short they have to be. They're supposed to only be between 500 and 800 words, which is quite concise. And then the other element you have to keep in mind is that your words need to do only what they need to do and leave plenty of space for the visual artist to get in there and do the rest. So we did that and we went through many iterations. And then when we finally were able to find our publisher, the University of Minnesota Press, they were the ones who helped us find Betsy. And I think this is, just anyone who's listening might know this but might not. I think a lot of people don't realize that if you're not the illustrator, your press doesn't want you to come attached with an illustrator. They want to work with you to find that person. And so, Minnesota had us do a list of, five or six illustrators we liked, not people we knew because we didn't know a lot of illustrators, but just people we found and thought were appealing. They did the same. And then we had this big Zoom meeting where we kind of went through and, discussed who we wanted. And we ended up with Betsy, and like, what a stroke of good fortune.
I love the earth tones. It's very autumnal. Obviously, Leaf Town would have been this time of year, September, October, November?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of the things that made us so excited to work with Betsy is that she, you know, your listeners should definitely, you know, Google and go to her website, but she's up in northern Minnesota, way up there in Grand Marais, which is right on Lake Superior. And she's lived up there for decades, and she has a studio in the town, and then she has a farm sort of on the outskirts of town. And so much of her work, you know, even outside of Leaftown Forever, our book, has very much to do with nature. She's always depicting landscapes and trees and leaves. Birds are a specialty of hers. I think she, like all wonderful people, loves birds and appreciates how miraculous they are. And so, you know, I think the earth tones and just everything she does with the book is so in harmony with the way that the little kids building Leaftown were kind of in harmony with their own surroundings. And that's, you know, one of the things we hope the book helps people get inspired to do is, like, just go outside. And, you know, if you live in a place without leaves, that's okay. You could make a rock town, or you could make a seashell town.
Mm. Wow. Seashell town. That would be quite an impressive town. My guest is Kathleen Rooney, and she joins us on the telephone in Chicago. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, introducing you to your new favorite song. And speaking of songs, Kathleen, don't you do some weird music thing with like the NCAA basketball tournament?
Yes. Yeah. One of, you know, I love being a writer, and that's often solitary, but one of my favorite things, you know, when I'm not collaborating with my sister on picture books is to collaborate and just participate with other writers. And I do this thing called March Xmas, which, again, your listeners are probably familiar with March Madness, the basketball tournament. And just like that, it's this, you know, seeded tournament where Andrew Monson and Megan Campbell, who run it, pick a theme each year of a type of song. This coming year, 2026, it's the saddest song. So it's March Sadness. Mm. And each essayist, it's so popular now, there's a lottery to get in. Like, so many essayists want to participate that, you know, they have to bring in this element of chance. But you get assigned your song, and then you write an essay. And then in March, they, you know, do a full bracket, and, you know, people fill out their brackets, and these essays based on the songs compete in this tournament where participants on the internet get to vote, and it's a hoot.
I love that. Kathleen Rooney joins us. She, along with her sister Beth Rooney, have a new book out called Leaftown Forever. I know you've been doing out publicity with Beth. How's it been going? What kind of response have you been getting?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. The thing that we, you know, we're learning so much about picture books, and the thing that a lot of our friends who, you know, work in the picture book field have emphasized, you know, because I have a lot of novels for adults, but it's a different sort of set of publicity requirements, is that with picture books, you want the kids to know about your book and be engaged with it, but kids don't, in our society, have power or money. So you have to also appeal to their parents and guardians, their teachers, librarians, scout leaders, you know, whoever. And so our events have been a lot of fun because we have been doing, you know, story times where we read the book, of course, but it's only 423 words long. So that doesn't take a ton of time. But our friends told us to come up with like activities that have to do with the subject of the book. And so that's been a lot of fun for us. Beth and I both like, you know, visual art and crafts and doing stuff in person. And so, you know, we've come up with different activities for kids to do. One of our favorites is to write haikus yourself, because the other thing about Leaftown Forever is that it's all written in the haiku poetry format. And so it's super fun to teach kids and their parents about the 5-7-5 count of haikus. And we also do a fun one where you take a sheet of paper and you divide it in four, and then you do all four seasons in your hand, where you trace your tiny hand and you make, you know, a tree for spring, summer, fall, and winter. Because it is a very fall story, but the idea with the Leaftown Forever is that, you know, can the kids get this town to last not just for one season, but for a long time?
Wow. Can you give us an example of one of these haikus?
Yeah. So I think, probably the best place to start, to begin is at the beginning. And I think, just again, probably your listeners know, but the thing we like about haiku is that it's poetry, but it doesn't have to rhyme, and that it has naturally, in the original Japanese iteration, these connections to the seasons. And so it felt not just like a way to get it shorter, but a way to tie to the leaves and the flowers. So I'll just read the first, the first four haikus. It won't take long.
Mm-hmm.
Lucinda watches golden leaves fall gently down. Could they make a town? Friends gather, plans hatch. The town would last forever. Leaf town, forever. The treasure shop grows from a pile of oak leaves, now to collect a trove, searching for treasures to be bought with ginkgo leaves, acorns, lost rings, shells. And so that's how it all begins.
Leaf town forever. And you wrote that with your sister. Tell us about Beth Rooney.
Yeah, Beth is 3 years younger than me. She's one of the people, including her son and daughter, Rose and Luca, my niece and nephew, who I have known since the day she was born, which is like a pretty like select set of people. Mm. And she's my best friend. Like, she and I have always just not just loved each other like family, but really liked each other. And she lives in Oak Park, Illinois, and I live up here in Chicago, and Oak Park is not that far. It's one of the first suburbs outside of the city limits. And she's a visual journalist, a photographer, and her work is very much in a sort of documentary style and very much into, pictures that can tell bigger stories. And so this is her debut literary work, but I think her work prior to this with her photos very much set her up to think about how to tell a story with a heavy visual component. So it was a lot of fun to work with her. People ask if we, had any conflict or rivalry writing it, or disagreements. And honestly, no. I mean, it was just really, really fun. I think we're really good at working together in a way where we can, express our dissatisfaction with something, in a way that's constructive. it's kind of like, I'm a college professor and I'm always running writing workshops, and we talk all the time about, how it's not that you have to say something is good if it's not, but you have to point out what's not working in a way that's constructive and makes the person want to fix it and not just feel bad. And I think Beth and I are really, really constructive with each other in our process, which is good. And we, we make ourselves laugh a lot. We crack each other up, so it's fun. Mm.
Kathleen Rooney joins us, and you just mentioned you're a college professor. That's at DePaul, right?
Yeah, DePaul in Lincoln Park in Chicago.
And don't you teach advanced poetry?
I do, and that's a class I love, speaking of books, because it's an advanced poetry workshop, so it's, the students there are reading and writing poetry just like you would in any class, but the way that I teach it, because we have the freedom to kind of do what we want within the requirements, is I have everybody make, instead of just a final portfolio, a limited edition poetry chapbook. And so a chapbook is like kind of a zine, or kind of this like smaller iteration of a poetry collection. If a normal poetry collection published by, an independent poetry press is typically like 48 pages minimum, usually like 48 to 90 is kind of what you hear. A chapbook is typically no more than 30, and often quite a bit shorter. And so the idea of it is almost like comparing like an EP to an LP, or, putting out a mixtape before you put out your album.
No.
It's a little taste of what could be longer or could just stand alone. So right now we're in finals presentations mode, because we're on quarters. And yeah, my first batch of students just presented their chapbooks yesterday, and five more are going to go tomorrow, and then five more next week. And it's amazing because they do everything, like the layout, the covers, the design, author bios. Some of them do author photos. Some of them get blurbs. And so you walk out of that class with a library of like 15 one-of-a-kind books by these young poets.
Speaking of poetry, Kathleen, your most recent collection is called Where Are the Snows? And I understand you have a new poet laureate in the state of Illinois.
Yes. Yeah. My most recent book, you know, came out in 2022. And it's a project that I wrote, you know, with, I have to shout out Kimberly Southwick, a fellow poet. She does a poem a day group every April where people sign up and commit to writing 30 poems in 30 days. So shout out to her because I wrote that book thanks to her amazing prompting. And then, yeah, at DePaul, we have Mark Turcotte, who is my colleague and who's a wonderful poet and who just this year was named the Poet Laureate of Illinois. So actually tonight, the night we're speaking, I'm going to be reading in a celebration of him on campus. And I think that kind of speaks to the kind of person he is. It's, you know, his honor, and the Visiting Writer Series asked him to do a reading because he's the Poet Laureate to kind of show him off to the community and our students. And he said, sure. But then he asked if he could have the other faculty poets in the department read with him. And so, yeah, we're doing that. And I think it's just, I love community and love when people do stuff together. So shout out to Mark for taking this as an opportunity to do that.
And when I think about you, I can always picture you sitting there with your typewriter in some public place surrounded by other people with typewriters. And this is quite an enterprise that you're involved in.
Yes, I do Poems While You Wait. And it's like a long-running organization now. We started in 2011. My friend Dave Landsberger, a fellow poet, brought the concept up from Miami, where he did it with some people in his MFA program. And then also Eric Plattner, who's my colleague at DePaul, who's a self-taught, really good typewriter repair guy, in addition to being a poet. And so, yeah, we now have about 40 people. It's a collective. We all work together on a volunteer basis, and all the proceeds, we typically charge $10 a poem, which is pretty reasonable for a deathless work of art. And all the money goes to Rose Metal Press, which is a literary nonprofit publishing company that I co-run with Abby Beckel. And so, yeah, our whole mission is to provide an unexpected, unpretentious encounter with poetry. And so people just run into us. Like this weekend, we're going to be at the Chicago Artisan Market, just a market where people are selling all kinds of stuff. And they give us a topic, and it can be one word or several words. It can be funny, it can be sad, it can be serious. And we write them a poem based on whatever they tell us. And it's, I think, I don't know, it's fun for most of us because, again, it's not just being solitary, it's being in connection with your audience right away. And it also gets us to write about stuff that we would never normally write about necessarily under our own devices.
What is the point, the purpose, the idea, the message in this book, if you had to capsulize that? What are you trying to get across to your readers?
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting question. I love that you asked that because, you know, the essay that inspired it in the New York Times was titled by them, because I think a lot of people don't know, but when you write something, you don't get to write your own headline usually. And they called it A Lesson from Leaf Town. And I think that's a great title. I love that they did that, but it's kind of anathema to the picture book world to be too lesson-y. So you want your lesson to just arise from the story organically and not end with some kind of Aesopian moral. So we tried really hard to avoid lessonishness. But if I had to say, I think what people are getting from it is that you should build your own leaf town, that there's nothing more fun than going out into the woods or out into nature with your friends and imagining something and just yes-anding each other until you build this elaborate world that you want to spend time in. Because the kids really did. I mean, this went on for months, and they really did kind of pass it on to the next set of kids. And they had this whole society where they used ginkgo leaves as their currency, and people were setting up shops and, you know, barber shops, hotels, restaurants. So I think, you know, a lot of the kids who we've encountered on our touring have said, like, they're going to go build a leaf town. And we've heard from parents afterwards that that has been happening, that their kids have been, you know, going outside and getting their friends and making their own imaginary worlds. And I think that's thing one. And then I think good picture books, because if they're good and if your kid likes it, you're going to read it a lot, like over and over again, because kids like repetition. So we tried to write it in a way that would not get dull for the parents either. And I think the big question, you know, because Leaf Town does come under threat. These other kids see it and kind of like what they see and threaten to destroy it, and then they do. And the Leaf Town kids have to decide how they're going to handle that. And so I think the bigger lesson for maybe more adult readers, although kids too, is, you know, how do you defend what you love against a threat without becoming what you don't like? You know, how do you protect something without just resorting to the same tactics as the destroyers? And so I hope people think about that.
How do you defend what you love? I associate you completely with Chicago. What's going on over there?
Yeah, well, I think it's a very Leaf Town situation, because I think, you know, like Leaf Town, Chicago is a beautiful place, a beautiful community with a lot of people who have a lot of love and pride for all of the people who live here. And so, yeah, with ICE and Border Patrol being up here, trying to just round up people off the streets and trying to turn this place that the administration says is a war zone into a war zone. They're kind of trying to fulfill their own false prophecy. I want to shout out to all the people of Chicago for being so committed to not letting that happen, and for standing up to their neighbors and for saying, no, we don't want that to happen. And so I hope people, I mean, I know it's so hard, there's so much propaganda, but I hope people are paying attention and seeing just, I don't know, how the community is coming together and trying to protect each other, and how even at the hands of, you know, violence, frankly, we're keeping it mostly nonviolent and trying, you know, kind of like Leaf Town, to preserve what we love without becoming what we do not want. They're coming here finding us very loving and peaceful, and want to fulfill their narrative that it's this violent place, and that's just not what Chicago is.
Hmm. Tell us about the flying squirrels.
Well, you know, one of the things that was so fun about Leaf Town, the real Leaf Town, and then also the book, is, you know, getting to see the natural world and kind of these creatures that live very close to humans. And so I'm a big fan of birds, and we have bird feeders. My husband, Martin C., who's a writer, and I. So by day, our bird feeders are frequented by, you know, the people you'd expect, by grosbeaks and cardinals and finches and all that good stuff, chickadees. But by night, we have flying squirrels, which I don't know if most people know, but they're kind of everywhere. It's just that you don't see them because they're fully nocturnal and they're fully up in the trees. So, you know, unless you have, like we do, this third floor condo with lots of windows and a bird feeder, you might never see them. But we have this pair. They've been coming since last summer. We don't know what they call themselves, but we call them Louise and Trapeze, and they're a lovely couple, and they've raised several sets of babies, and yeah, they come all year round and just eat sunflower seeds. Our brand of sunflower seeds is called Happy Wings, so I recommend that to those of you out there trying to attract your own flying squirrels.
And they literally fly up onto your ledge?
Yeah, they. It's amazing. They glide. They have, you know, people have seen them in pictures. They have flat tails that they use as like rudders, and then they have the flaps of skin, like the little wingsuit. And so, you know, technically, I'm told they don't fly, they don't flap, but they glide, and they're amazing. They glide all the time, and they do, you know, they don't just do it when they have to. They seem to just do it for fun. Like Martin and I call it enrichment. They kind of chase each other around and give each other the business, and they can glide around corners and great distances. It's like, it's, I don't know, it's a true joy to watch them out there. They're hilarious.
And they're nocturnal. I have never seen one, and I assume there aren't any around where I live, but maybe there are, and I just don't see them.
Yeah, I bet there probably are. I mean, I think they're kind of all over, you know, the Midwest and elsewhere. And, you know, again, we wouldn't see them if we didn't kind of accidentally start feeding them. You know, at first when we, like back in June of last year, when we first heard them, we were like, oh no, please don't be a rat. And then we looked and we were so delighted when we saw that they were flying squirrels. And people should Google, they have huge eyes. Their eyes are much bigger than normal squirrels because because of being nocturnal. And then they have these little ears that look just like teddy bear ears.
Oh.
And they're much smaller than normal squirrels, which are also cute. But I have to say, I think if it was a cuteness contest,
wow.
I would say flying squirrels win.
Amazing. Well, Kathleen, before we let you go, I've had you on the show before, and you're a poet. You're also a novelist. Tell us about your novels.
Yeah. So my most recent novel came out in 2023, and it's called From Dust to Stardust, and it's based on the life and work of the movie star Colleen Moore, who was a great silent film star and who built the Fairy Castle, which is this one-ton fairy castle at the Museum of Science and Industry here in Chicago. And then next summer, I'm super excited, my fifth novel is coming out, and it's called Man Overboard, and it has an exclamation point in the title, and it's about this guy who, he's 33, and he's on a cruise with his extended family for the Thanksgiving holiday, and he falls, or perhaps jumps, he can't remember, in the beginning, into the Gulf of Mexico, and then has to spend the rest of the book trying not to drown.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a survival story. It's a comedy.
Okay. That's Man Overboard?
Yep, Man Overboard, exclamation point.
Okay. Well, we had you on for the previous book, so I hope we can get you on again for Man Overboard.
Yeah, consider it done. I love coming on and talking with you. Thank you for having me, and just thank you for providing the space for talking about books.
And we had you on before that, too. You skipped over some. You said you have five novels so far?
I do, yeah. I mean, some others. I feel like the one that I have to talk about all the time because it's the one most people have heard of, and then I'll talk about another one, too, is Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk. That was my only book that's been a bestseller, not that they need to be, but it's cool when they are. So that's about, it's based off the real life inspiration of Margaret Fishback, who was the highest paid advertising copywriter in America in the 30s. And then, you know, bird lovers like us, I think would appreciate Cher Ami and Major Whittlesey, which I came on to talk about. And that's my World War I novel. And it's about the true story of Cher Ami, and, you know, Charles Whittlesey, who were the Lost Battalion, this group of soldiers in World War I who, you know, got separated and then got caught in this friendly fire incident. And Cher Ami is a pigeon, a messenger pigeon, who carried this message like so many little birds did during this conflict. And her message helped save the Lost Battalion from this friendly fire incident. And I think, you know, sometimes people nowadays are so accustomed to hearing pigeons you know, be described as rats with wings, but Cher Ami was such a hero that you can go see Cher Ami stuffed, taxidermied, at the Smithsonian Museum in Washington. It was that big of a deal. So I wrote a novel about that because I was just really interested in these unconventional war heroes.
I loved Cher Ami.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time today, Kathleen.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure. I really appreciate it.
My guest has been Kathleen Rooney, and she and her sister Beth Rooney have this new book out. It's called Leaf Town Forever. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks, as always, for tuning in.